Hello, everyone. My name is Sally Mason, and I am with the League of Women Voters and the moderator tonight. This candidate forum is being hosted by the Bozeman Public Library, Belgrade Community Library, Bozeman Professional Women, AUW, and the League of Women Voters Bozeman Area. The ballots were mailed out this week and must be returned by Tuesday, November 2nd at 8 p.m. The format will be as follows. Each candidate will be allowed 2 minutes to introduce him or herself. And following that, we'll ask you to answer the prepared question that we sent you, which is, if you received a $1 million grant to use for the city any way you wanted, what would you do with it and why? And following that, then we'll have questions from the audience, and I will let you know how you can get in to ask your question. But at the moment, let's start with, we have three candidates to my left, and two of them will be elected, that's correct, and three candidates to my right, and one of them will be elected. Mm-hmm. So who would like to start first to introduce yourself?
So it's 2 minutes to intro and answer that question.
Yeah. But first, we'll do intros all around, and then we'll do the question. Okay? So who would like to be first? Go.
Good evening. My name is Iho Pomeroy. I have run a small business in Bozeman for two decades. I am very grateful for our community support. And then I am also very honored to have been your last 8 years, your commissioners. So I'm learning again because I care about this community a lot. So thank you so much.
Okay. Who would be like to be next?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thanks so much. My name is Jennifer Magic, and I've lived in the Bozeman community for approximately 20-plus years. I have a background in community planning. I have a master's degree and have worked in a variety of fields, planning, basically. I came to Bozeman intentionally. It's a place I love. I love, like so many of the rest of us, kind of the small town feel, the outdoors, the mountains, a day like today with the fall colors and so forth. So I've been honored to have served on the Bozeman Planning Board for the past almost 4 years and the Bozeman City Commission for the past year, and really look forward, and this is why I'm running, to continue kind of the work of the Planning Board and implementing our community plan. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Who would like to be next?
I can go next. That's fine.
Okay.
All right. I don't know who I'm looking at this camera. So, hi, everybody. My name is Christopher Coburn. I use he and him pronouns, and I'm running for Bozeman City Commission. I'm from Montana, and I come from a family that's called Montana home for several generations. Most people might know that I was appointed to the commission earlier this year, and I'm running now for the same reason that I sought appointment then, which is because I really care about Bozeman, and I understand the challenge that many folks face as they work to make a home in Bozeman, because I'm confronted by those same challenges. Like many people in Bozeman, I'm burdened by student loan debt. I rent my apartment, and I'm being priced out of our housing market. I work multiple jobs, and I'm still no more than a couple paychecks away from having to make really challenging decisions. The point is, I have a lot in common with most people in Bozeman, and I'm serving and I'm running so that our voice and our experiences have a seat at the table. In the 6 months that I've been on the commission, I've helped to shape some really important decisions. I was successful in securing $500,000 to help people who are still being impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. I helped to make sure Streamline was fully funded so that we could develop and grow our public transit system. I've continued to elevate conversations about equity and inclusion, and I've centered affordable housing in every land use decision I've been a part of. I've demonstrated that I'll show up for individuals, for small businesses, and that I'm committed to creating a resilient community. And I'm excited about the opportunity to serve as commissioner for the next 4 years. So thank you all for the time tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I can go. I just want to try it out. It's like the first answer in a forum is like the first pancake. You know, you got to get one bad pancake out of the way, and then the pancake's a little better. My name is Joy Morrison. I use he and him pronouns. I am running for Bozeman City Commission, and I grew up in Montana. I spent my whole life here. Grew up in Miles City, Montana, originally, and came out here 7 years ago to go to school. And have decided to stay largely from the community that I've connected with here through grassroots organizing and through being a crisis worker. Much of my professional experience that I have in this community is with agencies like the Help Center, like Haven, like the Warming Center, working with folks experiencing homelessness, with survivors of domestic and sexual violence, with folks struggling with thoughts of suicide. And it was connecting in that work that helped me find like what I want to do and connect to this community that I want to call home. And for the last seven or eight months, I've kind of taken a hiatus from crisis work. I'm back into it again. I'm now full-time at the Warming Center. But I hopped into service industry work. I'd always kind of fantasized about working in a restaurant, and it was there that I really started to see the way in which small businesses are really struggling. Service industry workers are really struggling. And this community deserves representation from the people that actually make this community run and that make up the bulk of this community. The median age in Bozeman is 28 years old. 60% of the community are renters. Service industry is what keeps our tourism industry thriving and alive. And we need representation from those groups to be having a voice, because we are actively being priced out. We're actively being displaced from this community, all the while trying to make it our home, all the while making this community thrive. And that's why I'm running for City Commission.
Thank you.
How kind of you, Emily. So do I talk into this wonderful contraption?
No, you can just talk.
Talk to the room. Wonderful. I'm Evan Rainey. I'm running for the two-year commission seat along with these lovely individuals here. And at the core of my campaign, I should say our campaign, as Emily and I are running a campaign in tandem, as we believe a lot of the same things. At the core of that campaign is a desire to understand and deal with the fact that Bozeman is growing, Bozeman will change, and how do we do that properly and sustainably and in a manner in which we can maintain the small town feel people care for so dearly, but also accept that there's nothing we can do about the fact that half the country wants to move here and loves it here. So that is where our campaign lies. We're focused deeply on unified development code overhaul. We're focused on trying to stop corporate welfare, the ways in which we're subsidizing the gentrification of this city. We're focused on trying to get people who have not been heard that voice. And I think a lot of candidates talk about that specific element of this, people who have not been heard traditionally. And I think Emily and I, bridging the gap between renter, landowner, well, bank owns your land, but renter, landowner, employer, man, woman, and we hope to find a way to bring all the different voices to that table. And Emily's life has been dedicated to the people in this town who have the least, and she's lived around, and her community is based in people who don't have a voice at that table, as other people have said. And so it's my pleasure, my honor, to run alongside her and try my hardest with her to bring those voices forward and prepare for the next step that this city is going to take, because huge things are happening right now. And instead of trying to band-aid over problems, we have to make sure the structure is there ready for us to move forward. So that's what I'm about. Thank you, Sally. Mm-hmm.
And Emily?
Okay. Well, those were all really good pancakes. You'll have to pardon me. I just rushed home and rushed back here from Cashman Nursery, where I work. My name's Emily Talego. I'm running for one of the four-year Bozeman City Commission seats. I originally came out here. My sister lived out here, and I did collaborative research with someone at the university. I worked running a research lab there for quite some time before getting burnout and
going back to my roots, my father's a third-generation nurseryman, so it was a pretty easy transition. So now I'm a horticulturalist with a research science bend as opposed to the other way around. I'm running because I live here and I work here. I've built a life here. This community has shown up for me time and time again, and I've tried to find every single way that I can to show up in return. I constantly advocate for other people. I come to meetings. I have read commission meetings from the 80s and onward. Thank you. To try and wrap my head around how we got to where we are and what that requires then moving forward. I'm concerned that people are getting pushed out of here. I'm concerned that this town has been focusing on marketing its amenities as opposed to recognizing and supporting the people who actually provide those amenities. And I think we need to flip things right side up and take a look at how our policies are serving people as opposed to exterior interest. So I appreciate y'all having me here. And again, Evan did speak that we are running in tandem. It's a very cool election. 4 out of 5 voting seats are up. So things can shift this time around. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. So we asked the candidates to prepare the following question. If you received a $1 million grant to use for the city any way you wanted, what would you do with it? And why? And who would like to go first?
She did it first.
Emily?
Okay, so this was an interesting question. I'm a details person. I'm a data person. So, of course, I get a question, and then I have 10, but I don't get those answers. So the way in which I need to approach this is, number one, vet the dough, right? I grew up, there's nothing free in this life, and the last thing I want to do is accept some funds that have any strings attached. So where's the money coming from? Is it from taxpayers? All these other things. Is it that, you know, there's a benefactor of some sort? And I didn't have the answer to that. So I proceeded under the notion that Bozeman as a city, let's say Jeff Mihalik, bought a lottery ticket on the city's behalf, right? And we won the lottery, you know, as opposed to a grant. So we vet the dough, right? We know where it came from. We're good to go now. We need to invest it. And I think that looks, you know, in my opinion, what I would like to see is a revolving loan fund that is used for people to fix up their own properties, focused on owner-occupied residences that are at risk of being displaced right now. Everyone wants to be able to stay in their home, and I think it's a great way to foster gentle infill, as well as permit people to stay who are vulnerable at being squeezed out. So I imagine somewhere the tune of like probably $760,000 of that, get that started, keep that going. And I got to be honest, you know, the remainder there, the 240, you know, it's been a hard couple years. And I think this town needs a big party, a real big party, a block party citywide that, like, no one has ever seen. But, man, this place needs a party. It's money we didn't have yesterday, and it's money that's not earmarked yet. Let's celebrate.
Okay, thank you. Who would like to? Okay, Jennifer?
Okay, this seems a little dry compared to a party, but I love the idea. I love this question, both for its simplicity, but also an opportunity for us to kind of be creative with it. So I have a fairly simplistic answer, and what I thought makes sense, given our current priorities, our current housing crisis, is to split the $1 million into 80% for housing and 20% for conservation. So housing, I think everyone around the table here, probably most of the people at your forum last night, is a number one priority. It's a number one priority of our current city commission. It's a priority of our growth policy. And so to spend 80% on housing, I think, makes a tremendous amount of sense. And the conservation, to me, is extremely important. And I believe we need conservation-oriented planning strategies. So to prioritize how we spend the $800,000 and $200,000, I propose looking at the plans that we have. We have a number of city plans, the Community Housing Action Plan, Climate Action Plan, Growth Policy Strategic Plan, Parks and Trails Plan. So we need to go to those plans to figure out how to spend that money and how to prioritize, make priorities within that spending. And then really importantly, we need to involve the public. All decisions regarding money need to be transparent and need to be a community, have to be a community dialogue and held in a public process. So prioritizing housing while not forgetting about our environment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I also really thought this was like just a tender question, very wholesome question to start out these forums. And yeah, thought for a while and really tried to figure out like how do I demonstrate like a really firm and nuanced mastery of all the different things that the city could be prioritizing its funding for. But I think I just had to kind of go with my heart and what motivates me and what would inspire me if the city were to use $1 million for. And assuming that it is like a grant, that there's no strings attached, we applied for it, we got $1 million, is to put every dime of it into the housing department of HRDC to foot the bill for the warming center so that we can have it running all year round. We thinking really practically to do it right now, like imagining we got it today, to take the next several months to prepare as a staff and as an agency and as a community for moving towards a warming center that is open 365 days a year. We know also that if the city were to foot the bill for like $1 million, there are federal funding programs that will only give money if you match. So we could potentially get $2 million. Suddenly, bam, we've set this in motion. We have some momentum. And knowing that there are, we have 120 beds at the warming center right now. And we have day center operations where folks are coming in and working on resumes, trying to figure out how they can get back on their feet, trying to find jobs, trying to get to connect even yoga classes so that they can take care of themselves throughout the day. And we know that it is a core component of a healthy community and being able to provide this as a resource all year round, not just in the colder months. And so, yeah, and knowing that that also saves us money. Folks experiencing homelessness in this community through use of public transportation or using the hospital or from law enforcement costs us about $28,000 a year. We know that somebody housed, even in transition, costs only about $11,000 a year to the community. So we would, in a way, it is kind of investing it.
Okay. Yes, Chris.
Thanks, Ellie. I also agree. This is a very interesting question. And when I was thinking about it, I think it's interesting in the sense that it's not something that hasn't happened before. It actually happens pretty frequently to the city of Bozeman, and happened earlier this year when we were considering how to spend $12 million of ARPA funds that were basically a gift to the city of Bozeman. And so this is something that I have experienced contemplating and experienced talking to my commission colleagues about and talking to the public about. So for this one, I kind of leaned on that experience and what I wish we would have been able to do with some of those fundings we got. And so to put it into perspective, $1 million is a lot of money, but when compared to the general operating budget of the entire city of Bozeman, it's actually not that much money. That said, $1 million can be transformational, especially considering the challenges that we're facing now and the challenges that are still being presented because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So all that said, I would use $1 million. I would use the $1 million grant to assist low-income families with paying for childcare. In thinking about this question, like I said, many people, and my first thought was housing, because housing continues to be a top priority for our community in a crisis that we're going to be working out our way through for years to come. And it's a project that could definitely use $1 million of grant funding. But I think if applied thoughtfully, grant dollars used to support the childcare needs of low-income families would not only provide economic stability for some of our lowest income families who are also working, but it could also help alleviate some of the workforce shortage that we're experiencing, that if we don't start to solve that, we actually won't get to the place we need to be. So that's how I would spend $1 million.
I'm glad you all like this question. I liked it too. Which of you would like to be next?
You want me to go? I was there last time.
Okay. $1 million, like Commissioner Coburn mentioned about, it can be a big money, but right now, affordable housing, child care, etc., they are our city's top priorities. So I've been thinking hard, what can I benefit to everybody? What I like to do is, I like to work with the Bozeman Sunrise Rotary Club, and you donate the $1 million and the matching fund, it grew, and we together we can have a parks and trail, makes it greener and trees. So those kind of things, it's I can benefit myself and my family and my children and my grandchildren, grandchildren, grandchildren. According to study, what it says is people who spend the time with the greeners make it's healthier and happier. I haven't seen, when tsunami hit Japan, we had a fundraiser, we raised $20,000, and then I told them, let's donate to Bozeman Sunrise Rotary Club. It was one of the best decisions. It took time, but later it became $80,000, and we went there for one of the place hitting the hardest one. What do you need? They said, we need fishing trucks. So we be able to buy a full fishing truck. So I think $1 million, we cannot have that much affordable housing or child care. How can everybody can benefit here? Okay, let's working with one of non-profit organizations or private sectors, and let everybody enjoy like Miss Emily Talago mentioned about. So I like to have more greener and the parks and trail. That I think that is a great contribution everybody can enjoy. And $1 million, I feel like at the end, well spent. Thank you.
Okay.
Sally, some wonderful suggestions from everybody at the table. One thing that everything has in common, and the answer, my answer at least in one word, land. Whether you are looking to have a beautiful town square around which a community, a city revolves, whether it's talking about parks and trails, whether it's housing, whether it's working in partnership with nonprofits to further their goals, or whether it's a mix of all of the above, you need valuable, high-quality public land at the center of your cities for which to achieve any of that. Now, Bozeman is growing, and we will need land around which public spaces to accommodate all of these needs that the city has. And so the other feature that I should mention about land is once you sell it, it's very hard to get it back as a government. So only via eminent domain and other tricky problems. Public land is precious. And when you get a cash infusion like that and you have the opportunity to buy a lot, no matter how small, you can put that to any one of those fantastic uses, but only if you have that land in the first place. And land is precious. It is fixed in quantity. And that is why that is the most, what I would spend the $1 million on in whole would be to purchase a plot of land in anticipation of all of these needs as the city continues to grow.
Okay. I thought that was a fun question. So now I want to ask you a couple of rapid-fire questions. Do you have a pet? I'll start with you. Do you have a pet?
Yeah, I have three.
What do you have?
Two dogs and a cat, and they're all black and white.
Okay. Jennifer?
I have a 10-month-old puppy who bit me right before the meeting started. 10-week-old puppy is what I meant, yeah.
Sharp teeth.
Sharp teeth.
Evan?
Emily has four chickens,
all right.
which I also help take care of, and I'm this close to getting a cat, but I just need to
watch out for the chickens.
Right. I know, right?
Do you have a pet?
I did. And they stayed with us for 16 years. Mm. And
old age died.
A dog or
cat? Yeah, dog.
Mm-hmm. Chris? I don't have a pet, but that's not because I don't love animals. I just have a lot of... just to make sure everyone knows, I don't have a pet. I love animals.
Yes, so in addition to the chickens, Devin, who's our other roommate who's in the audience right now here to support us, he has a couple of fish. And then we actually just were able to rehabilitate a baby American red squirrel for a successful re-release. And so, yeah, little acorn made it. And but, yeah, so he's no longer in the house. But, yeah.
And what's the last book you read? We'll start with you, Emily.
It was a book called The Overstory.
Yes.
Trees. Yeah.
Last book I read was called Just Medicine. It's about how you can apply racial equity frameworks to healthcare.
Last book I read about the poem.
Poems?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Poems.
Okay. Evan?
Thinking Fast and Slow. It's an economics book.
Okay.
Very fun.
Jennifer?
Eviction, which is a Pulitzer Prize-winning book on housing evictions.
Housing evictions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like chest deep in rereading / re-listening to Dune because the movie comes out and everybody around me is telling me I need to be back up to speed on everything that happens with House Atreides, and I'm working on it.
Okay. And now for the audience questions. Here's how to submit your questions. At the bottom of your screen, you'll see a toolbar. If you can't see it, try moving your mouse over the screen or press the Alt button. I love how I'm telling you this. I never can do it myself. The toolbar should pop up at the bottom. The Q&A feature listed on the toolbar is what you can use to submit your question. To submit it, select the Q&A button and type in your question. Then hit Enter to submit.
Sally's the chat bar.
It's the chat bar. Never mind. The chat bar. Whatever that might be.
Can we have that question?
Sure.
It's right at this one.
Okay. Here's a question, and you get a minute, each of you a minute to answer these questions. Okay? And this question was sent in. People who present issues at the city commission meetings are often well-prepared, well-educated, and supporting positions that may increase their wealth. How will you, as commissioner, represent those citizens who are working multiple jobs to stay afloat, single parents, caregivers, or the homeless, who often do not have representation regarding these issues presented to the commission? I didn't write the question. Don't look at me that way.
It's 1 minute.
1 minute.
Can we have a forced order at some point?
Yeah.
I
like it's less anxiety inducing, but it's maybe more expedient.
Do you want to read it again?
Yeah, yeah, I can read the question again. But first the question is, do you want me to force the order?
Yes, please.
You do.
Does everybody want
me to force the order?
Sure.
Okay, fine. We're going to start with you, and then we'll start with you with the next one, and et cetera.
Here's
the question. I'll repeat it. People who present issues at the city commission meetings are often well-prepared, well-educated, and supporting positions that may increase their wealth. How will you, as a commissioner, represent those citizens who are working multiple jobs, single parents, caregivers, or the homeless, who often do not have representation regarding these issues presented to the commission? We're starting with you.
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, I do represent the voices of a lot of those groups. And I think that it speaks to a shift that the city itself needs to be taking in terms of how it conducts outreach on issues. Right now, it is really, really hard to really understand what is happening in the city, what the city's doing. Even if you send somebody the agenda in the minutes, it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody knows, you know, oh, 60% of these are like land use. I don't really understand what they're talking about. It's pretty inaccessible. And I'd love to see a staffed position that is just city outreach. They, you know, run Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all these different platforms to make sure that this information is getting out, which would then, I think, invite more engagement from these groups that have historically not been brought in for these conversations, have not been represented in these conversations and decision-making processes. But at the center of it, to kind of back up, is why I'm running. I mean, this exact reason is central to the need for new representation in those that are pulling the levers of power in our municipal government. Thanks.
Thanks for the question, a really important question. Our city is better when we hear from everyone and we can address multiple issues and multiple needs. And I agree that our city needs to do outreach both to try to engage with everyone on a variety of different levels, whether it's in person, virtually, whatever the, you know, different times of day, kind of mixing it up. We also really need to look at staffing, making sure our staff is diverse and representative of the community. We need to look at our advisory boards, and we're doing that right now through a series of interviews. We also, I think, need to look at the city commission. We need to have a diverse city commission. Different incomes, different backgrounds, different walks of life, and so forth. So great, great question.
I'm glad you asked the question as well, Sally. It's, you know, number three on Emily and I on our agenda. Amplify voices, build trust. Local government should come to the people. I, like most people, took absolutely no interest in local government for large parts of my life because, precisely as other people have mentioned, I had no idea what was going on. And it was because Emily explained to me, here's tax increment financing, here's how we're subsidizing gentrification. And the numbers added up, and I just thought, this is insane. I completely am in agreement with my opponent, Mr. Morrison, over here with regards to a full-time position, perhaps a community outreach officer or something like that, whose job it is solely to consistently engage with the community. There's also other ways that we can encourage participation, whether that's, say, child care provided on-site at board meetings, so that people who have children who don't have that time to attend or to really engage or are too busy can bring their children with them and engage in more meaningful manners. And Emily will continue, I think, my answer to this question, because we're running out of 60 seconds, but that's the start of the answer. So okay. There you go.
This thing is true. When we had an in-person meeting, I often fail for public comment 30 minutes. The people who need to be there, they're not there because they work all day. And then, like you mentioned, two jobs, three jobs, when they come home, they're tired, and that they need to make dinners and their children. So I have felt that kind of things deeply when I was doing a commissioner in person. So our city, I mentioned about that often, our city is the best. Try to include and try to things, but I think that area, a lot of areas, we need to work more, but I think our city continue pursue their area. How can we include everybody and not only people who has money and time and all those things, the people who really need to be there and should be included there. Yes, I agree. Thank you.
Again, this is a great question. It's something that we think about a lot on the commission. It's something that I think about a lot personally. And I think when I heard this question initially, I think the biggest thing that we can do, or that I do as a commissioner, is make sure that I'm actually embedding myself in the community. I spend most of my days working directly with folks who aren't usually invited to those kinds of spaces that I'm in professionally, to make sure that I understand what those needs are, so that when I cast my vote, I'm being informed by the experiences that aren't in the room, in addition to the voices that are able to make it. So I think that's a big part, is that commissioners need to be embedded in our community, and that's what I have done and will continue to do. I also think, to Jen's point about our advisory board structure, I pushed extremely hard for us to make sure that we were holding ourselves accountable to make boards that were diverse. And the next step for that piece of work is to institutionalize processes that break down barriers to people to be a part of those boards, such as having childcare meetings, having stipends, and helping people with transportation.
Okay, so I kind of heard two things from that question, so I'm going to approach both. One is this idea that those who come and ask and participate are the ones who get served. And so that, you know, again, addresses that narrative of what is the role of a city commissioner. And it is to be discerning in that regard, that just because someone's actively participating or bringing something to you, you still have to have the discernment to say, well, who does this benefit? And who, like, does it benefit everyone in the public? Is the public, you know, benefit more so? Is it disproportionate to just one group or another? So it doesn't matter who brings it to you. And then on the other hand, too, we are obligated to go and find out other places. So just because someone's not showing up and saying, I would like cash in lieu of, you know, Parkland funds to do this thing, doesn't mean that there aren't other user groups and, you know, people who would be interested in that. We can't just address the ones who are coming and asking.
Okay. Next question. We're going to start with you, Jennifer. What factors do you take into consideration when you are trying to decide how you will vote on something?
Yeah, great question. We have to take into account the law. That's pretty important, and I think a lot of people, excuse me, don't realize how many constraints we have. There's a lot of criteria, whether it's coming from state statute, our own Bozeman Municipal Code. So we are kind of hemmed in when it comes to some of our decision making. Paying attention to community need, to public testimony, to the public who is not testifying, which could be the future, people who aren't presently here, children, and so forth. So really kind of taking into account the big picture of how a decision plays out, both on our landscape and in, within the social fabric of our community.
Yes. I think Jennifer makes a fantastic point that unfortunately a lot of people look at the city commission as an opportunity to fulfill a wish list of things that we can do, and mostly we can't, because Montana State Legislature constricts very much what cities can do. So the first question I suppose that one should ask when deciding whether to vote on something is, can we do it? To which the answer is usually not. A second very important thing, and something that Emily specializes in greatly, and I'm very pleased to run alongside her for this, is do the numbers add up? Because in so many cases, you might be well-intended in a policy that you're looking to enact. However, you're actually financially creating more problems than you are solutions. And perhaps if you'd have addressed the same problem in a different way, you would have created more available funding and been able to address even more problems. And so, unfortunately, I think many of the city's policies often, as well-intended as they are, can cause more harm than good with regards to the numbers. And so that's a huge, important question, because people are concerned about their property taxes in the city, so we have to make sure that it is spent wisely and well.
Yes, thank you. It's a good question. Like previous mentioned about we have to comply with the city's rules and their things. And also our city staffs, they are just well equipped and they're expert. And they provide a bunch of the, they study hard and they communicate a bunch of the materials. So I read those things and if I have a question, I ask them and our city manager, and also I ask some other people too, and think about it, what is the best way for our public. So sometimes it's pretty hard, especially the NIMBY or those kinds of things. But the thing is, current situation, what is the best for not only certain to everybody. So that's what I base on the suggestion, read the materials, and common sense. Thank you.
I would agree with a lot of things that have been shared already. When I'm making decisions as a commissioner, I think about the laws and the rules that we have to follow, the criteria that applicants have to meet in order for us to make a positive finding. I think about and look to the plans that we have that we've developed in partnership with a broad cross sector of our community to see how they are aligned to those plans. But I think the most important thing that I consider is Is a policy or a rule, is it going to inadvertently perpetuate any sort of inequity or perpetuate any sort of harm that has either been done on purpose or has been done by mistake or unknowingly? And so I really believe that policies are either can promote equity or can perpetuate inequity, and there's not really any policies that fall in between that. So I try to make sure that I'm always on the side of promoting equity.
So when considering whether you're going to vote on something or not, again, bringing back that discernment I spoke about earlier, but yes, the legality of it. That being said, I am not afraid to get creative sometimes. Sometimes civic virtue requires a little bit of civil disobedience. I'm of that mindset. Also, is it our wheelhouse? Is what we're looking at doing something that actually should be the role of a local government or not? Is it something that is actually even attainable for a local government? So is it our wheelhouse? Then also prioritizing it. My thing is I need to be convinced that something is in the best interest of the public in order to vote yes on something. And so, yeah, I think people also need to adjust their expectations. City Commission doesn't have a magic wand, and we're not the UN or anything like that. So, yeah, cheers.
Awesome. I think first and foremost, I like to break decisions down by who is likely to benefit and who is likely to be hurt, who will be helped, who might be hurt by a decision. And in keeping that grounded in considering harm that may be baked into the system, structural inequities that might be furthered or worsened by a decision, and being prioritizing at the very center what we deserve as a community, what decisions are informed in best practices that we know make communities healthy. So starting there, starting with what human beings deserve, what will give them dignity, not necessarily, which is shifting priorities from folks that are experiencing hardships right now, folks that are already struggling, and investing the energy, investing momentum, investing prioritization in those communities rather than communities who, to the previous question, who often show up and are loudest at city commission meetings.
Okay. Next question, we're starting with you, Evan.
Spooky.
What do you think the city can do to help small-scale local businesses compete with large corporations in Bozeman?
That's the full question, yeah?
That's the full question.
Thank God for that question, sadly, because it's right at the core of our first and foremost, right at the start of our plan, Emily and I, is to completely overhaul the Unified Development Code. As things stand right now, in terms of business regulation and development regulation, the city is suffocating innovation, and there are so many individuals who would love to enter this economy and feel like they can't. And of course, labor shortages are a huge part of that. But besides that, I think currently, when you're looking at a lot to build a business and it must be in a business-only district, then it must be set back so far, and your sign ordinance to get your sign, it must be 15 feet from the end, and so on, and so on, and so on. It's never-ending. How are you ever going to enter that marketplace? So to completely overhaul the Unified Development Code and especially remove this arbitrary, archaic distinction between residential and business properties, which residential and business have been connected and close together since the dawn of time, and we've made the mistake to separate them. It's time to undo that and allow mixed use everywhere, and allow that opportunity for small businesses, your local corner grocery store, your neighbor running a childcare center out of their side of their house, whatever it might look like. And those opportunities can only exist when you allow the flexibility in the code for people to create those small opportunities.
Yeah.
Our city recognized the problems, so we have been working very hard to try our code user-friendly. So we know there is a problem, and sometimes, I'm going to be honest with you, our staffs have some hard time to understand. So instead of those kind of coming, so right now our city is working very hard. So also, I'm also one of the small business owners too. So thank you.
I think that the heart of this question really is, how do we really support local small businesses? And I think one of the things that local small businesses can't compete with bigger businesses is they can't, or they have a harder time supporting employees in things like childcare or housing. And so I think our local government should play more of a role in making sure that things like childcare and housing are available so that small businesses can attract employees the same way that larger businesses are able to do that. So I think that's exactly in alignment with what the commission can do, what we're allowed to do by law, and what we should be doing to really bolster and support our network of small businesses that are so vital to this community. I think I wouldn't be the public health professional in the room without saying that we also need to be serious about staying committed to recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic. The truth is that these pandemics are going to be more acutely felt by smaller businesses who have less of a labor market to fall back on when their employees get sick. So we need to continue to stay hypervigilant on the COVID-19 recovery.
So acutely, in regards to COVID, on my brain now because of Commissioner Coburn.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. No, I wasn't going to go that direction, but I will. The reality is that all these businesses were hurt, the smaller the business were. But what I really feel for, too, is the people who were running businesses who were essential workers. We are getting a large influx of dollars, and we did also have a large influx previously of grant money. It is not too late. The checks have not been written. We can change that and adjust it to support the people who have been struggling this entire time and serving us here. I guess, furthermore, there's not a whole lot we can do about those market conditions, but we should look at what those services, like what the local businesses are catering to, because we need more of the accessible for everyone. So.
Yeah, when I think of what's like hurting businesses right now, what's making it tough for them, it's a recognition of things that I've seen and that I've been experiencing during my time in the service industry in this community, is we know that housing and childcare will make it easier for employees to stay. I work in a restaurant with like 30 staff, and I have been there 8 months, and I am now the second most tenured employee there. And most of them have left because they were priced out of this community. Most of them did not take a job elsewhere. Most of them left Bozeman altogether. There are some, however, who did leave and went to work for McDonald's, who can pay $22 an hour where we can only pay $15. So there's certainly a nuance to the challenges that come with supply chain that has caused things to grow, like expand in cost, like how expensive to-go boxes have gotten for restaurants, which is like a really silly barrier. But I think at the center is just, if people can stay here, people want to be working in these businesses, but they just can't pay enough. The businesses can't pay enough, and they're getting priced out.
Great question. I have served on our community food co-op board for 7 to 8 years and have really learned a lot in that position of the importance of supporting our local businesses and learning the imbalanced playing field between corporate America and small business, small independent businesses. And I think that there is a lot we can do from a city's perspective. And we've spoken of some of that, our code, making our code easier for the small developer. Right now, our code is more user-friendly for the large developer. As citizens, we can support local businesses. I'm looking at EHO with your local business. Support local business. It makes a difference. I also think there's a lot of creative ideas out there, like allowing smaller spaces, and downtown is looking at opening up the alleys to businesses with smaller spaces, smaller rent, and so forth. So that's it.
Thank you. Can we start with you? No, we just did.
Oh! Are you trying to trick me? There you go.
How do you plan on staying in connection with the community?
That question is my daily life. I do. My daily life, I'm always connected. That's what I ended up here. And 9 years ago, the three ladies asked me to. They're all gone now. But that's what I do. And then my restaurant is not very expensive restaurant. It's for, my husband told me from the beginning, please, Iho, don't make expensive restaurant for everybody. So it has been, it's like that. But I've been seeing a lot of construction always. That next to the MSU and currently because of springtime, people bring a lot of mud, construction. So I asked them not too long ago, why do you like our food? Three reasons. Delicious, reasonable price, hearty food. So I always say, why you don't build affordable housing here? You're too difficult, too expensive, no, too rent high. So I think I'm connected. Thank you.
A big part of my jobs that I have is being connected to the community. So I'll continue to do those in the ways that I have for the past 5 years, which has really led me to be able to get to know virtually all of our nonprofit leaders across the community. I'm connected to the people who are providing services every day to people in our community. I serve on boards of nonprofits. I'm even on the board of a small bank because that's how much I care about being invested in the things that make our community run. I also think that through this campaign, you really have a chance to see how candidates are running campaigns. And there are some candidates, like myself included, who are committed to making sure that we're connecting with people by doing things like knocking on doors and hosting events and hosting opportunities online, posting updates to our social media, sending out newsletters, all these things where we are connecting with people. And I can speak for myself that that's not going to stop once I'm elected to the commission, because those have been incredibly valuable to help me understand what people are experiencing and what people are feeling in our community.
So how to stay connected. So there's ways that I'm connected now, which have happened fairly organically, just because of where I am within the city. You know, my background, I've just interacted with people from all different walks of life, right? In the same day, I could be out, you know, doing a construction job cleanup for something, kind of moonlighting, and then be, you know, talking to a Nobel laureate up at MSU about their latest publication. So when you're able to interact with so many different people, and you're comfortable with that, and you're like adaptable to that, that's important. But that's for me personally. The city, we have to reassess entirely that and accept that we are completely unapproachable for all but very small percentage of the population. And so we need to meet people where they're at and look into different technologies. You know, I'll quickly say this. If we can't put in a single spaced one page what it is that we're trying to do and communicate that to the public, we might not need to be doing it.
I think when I used to think of like elected officials, to me, they didn't really exist. I never saw them. I didn't see them at the grocery store. I didn't see them out in the community. And that has been fundamentally antithetical to how I've been trying to run as a candidate and how I hope to serve as a commissioner. I will continue to recreate in our community. I will continue going to the places that I have been going. I will continue being invested in the restaurant community. I'll continue being invested in the crisis work community. These are central to why I'm running and how we've been running. It's also shown the power and the social change potential of knocking doors. Our campaign has really focused on ground game and is probably nearing our 10,000th door that we've knocked. And that is a fundamentally different way in which our current city government interfaces with the public. And we've talked with communities that have battled with the city, and all they said was, I just wanted them to come and talk to me. I would have said yes to a development if they would have come and talked to me at my door first.
So I have been a public servant for about 20 years, and part of being a public servant has been working with the public in a variety of ways, on phones and meetings, various outreach, both throughout our county, our city, and our state. I've taken that seriously. I'm a community planner, so you have to involve community. As a city commissioner, I believe I've got to kind of keep that up and really make sure that I'm connecting with the variety of folks in our community. Just simple things, like once again, kind of going to local stores. I'm a walker. I worked on Main Street for 15 years. And just, you know, being friendly and having conversations with people.
So a lot of, part of the reason we have four seats up for grabs this time around is because people quit, because $19,200 a year to work 20 hours when it is not is perhaps inadequate for them, but 20 hours is a lie, and I'm sure the people who are currently on the commission can accept that. It's asking an extraordinary amount of somebody, and that's why I've also tried to repeat this on other occasions. I will work this job full time. I don't care about the money. I'll be fine. That all the different forms of outreach that people have mentioned here only matter if you're doing it 50, 60 hours a week consistently, not just doing the bare minimum or whatever it takes, or just showing up to the meeting and pressing yes and moving on. You know, it comes down to things like I've gone directly to people's addresses to their houses to ask them about their opinions when they wrote letters to the editor of the Bozeman Chronicle. I wanted to have a deeper conversation with them rather than just read two columns there. And so that's where I stand, is I will work this job full time. And then if I have to get a part-time job for some money, who knows? But this will be 100% the priority of my life.
Okay.
Can you say something to that really quick, Sally? Do you mind? I think I just heard this a few times, and I think that it's just critical to know that there's not a commissioner that's serving that doesn't put in more than no one's doing the bare minimum. You can't be a commissioner and do the bare minimum.
I did acknowledge that,
so,
right at the start.
Yeah, I just want to, just for the public to know that that's actually, there's not a commissioner that does that, because it would be impossible to be a commissioner and actually do that.
I completely agree, and I acknowledge that at the beginning, but there's also the next step, and that next step is treating it as a full-time job if you don't have other things in the way.
Okay. Next question. Okay, I'm going to start with you, Christopher. What do you cherish most about this community?
Oh, you know, I cherish a lot about Bozeman. Like I said, I'm from Montana, and these smaller communities raised me. They're the reason that I have the worldview that I have, the reason that I continue to participate in the ways that I do, and I owe so much to communities like Bozeman across Montana. Specifically about Bozeman, I think one of the things that is drawing people to Bozeman, aside from that it's just beautiful, is the fact that when you come into Bozeman, you feel a sense of community that you don't feel many other places. And it's my guiding mission to protect that. And I view growth through that lens, which is that if people are coming to Bozeman and they're connecting with that part of our identity that is very community-focused, we should be welcoming into that. And we should be saying, hey, here's how we do things. Welcome to this community. How do we loop you in? And I think that's what guides me, and that's what I will continue to do as a commissioner and just as someone who cares deeply about Bozeman.
What do I cherish the most? Well, it'd be people first. You know, even the ones that are rough around the edges. You know, I've had a neighbor mechanic, and unfortunately they are leaving. They'll be leaving before Thanksgiving. But yeah, you know, curmudgeon-y mechanic guy. But there's characters here, and people are resilient. And they're, you know, it's this kind of thing of you work really hard, and you don't really get too mixed up in someone else's business. You don't push your stuff on them. You treat them, you know, with respect. You take pride in your area. You take pride in your home. You take pride in your town. I've seen this place come together and rally around people who have been in tough spots before. I had the place I was living burned down in 2012, and I was supported entirely by this community, people who I'd never even met before. And so the generosity, the characters here, it's the people.
Yeah, I think community is the core that keeps me, that made me stay. My partner and I considered for a long time whether we wanted to leave and go to grad school somewhere. And we decided to stay largely from just kind of finding the pulse of this community in working in crisis work, in working with the nonprofit sector here in this community that helps keep this community bold and bright and beautiful time and time again. And I think central to that is there's this air of Bozeman and being a really bustling, fast-paced community, but also does not take itself too seriously. And I think that that is certainly something that feels very welcoming to me as someone who wanted to run for city commission but didn't want to cut my hair or not wear a flannel to forums. And I think that that's a really central component of what makes this community feel inviting to so many different people. And I endeavor to expand that feeling of invite and care.
Yeah, I'm going to be another person who talks about the people. I originally came here for the mountains and the outdoors and the small town, but it's really the people that are pretty amazing. This is, I've lived longer in Bozeman than any other place, and I don't want to leave. And it's because of the relationships I've developed here, whether it's the mail person or folks at MSU or our nonprofits or our school districts or the Warming Center, HRDC, or the Help Center, whatever it happens to be. I mean, there are some passionate people here who are committed to making this a better place. And I feel that as a member of the City Commission, you know, I believe we are all passionate. We all care. We all want to do the right thing. And I feel that with the candidates here, too. You know, I think we're all in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, I think really everybody's answer is essentially the same, and that is that each individual person in this room and in the city has their community. Whatever that looks like changes, and it might be people involved with your small, with your restaurant, it might be people involved in the health department where you work, it might be a catchment's nursery where Emily works, crisis work for Jerry. All these different features, that completely makes sense. And so that was the case for me too, of course, and it was really living with Emily and her chickens, and it was something kind of so different. I'd lived my whole life in such an urban environment, and suddenly I was in the middle of mountains and there was chickens in my backyard, and I was like, what's happening right here? But I think more than that, it's not just community, we all know that. It's little things, such as the fact that we live next door to Whittier Elementary School, and I get woken up every day by the sound of kids playing, or deep at night, 10:30 p.m., just before I'm going to go to bed, I hear the sound of the train horn in the background, and it just, you know, booming over the city. And it's those little things that are unique and special to this place that, once you add them all together, create something that we all adore so deeply.
Okay. Iho?
This question makes me very emotional. I bothered my husband a year. You are very smart. Figure out something for me. And he said, you like to cook, Iho. So he made a food cart at his father's studio. It took five months. And the health department told me I have the best state homemade food cart in state. And the community supported me. And this community embraced me. And 25 years, I haven't seen the small business. We talk about small local business have failed. So I'm still there, and I'm just so grateful. They supported me. They embraced me, and I'm still there. And just grateful. 25 years ago, people did not know about Korea, and now they know about Korea. Now it's about, because of pandemic, people think of more, let's eat the fermented
time.
Eat. That's Korean food, so I'm embracing. Thank you.
Okay. Emily, what are your thoughts on infill within city limits?
I am absolutely in support of smart, gentle infill. One of the things that I would like to see happen is for us to stop doing a top-down and focus on a bottom-up approach to affordable housing. Something like that can look like, okay, we have existing homes. So I still drive the 1987 Corolla I bought when I was 15. So I'm very much like, if you can fix something that already exists. Also, for the first time, you know, insofar as I can remember growing up on job sites, renovations were always way more expensive than tearing down and rebuilding. With the cost of materials and labor right now, we're seeing that shift. So I am very much interested in looking at the housing stock that we already have, especially in older pockets of Bozeman, going in, fixing them, making them more accessible for the aging population that's living there, and then split it into units, add efficiency apartments, add ADUs to there, and do a bottom-up for infill.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of similar things to what Emily just said. We know even just adding the perspective of like our water use, that we're really rapidly outstripping our water resources. We know if we infill, we build more densely, we're less water consumptive. Infilling in insofar as making it easier, to build an ADU, to renovate units to become, especially in older parts of Bozeman, to make them more ADA accessible for retired fixed income folks. It's just the inevitable direction in where we're heading. We know that we need to make these processes easier. We need to make them less bureaucratic. We need to make them less regulated. We need to make them just simpler and easier, both in terms of labor and resources on the side of homeowners, but also provide financial support if that's something that we need to assist with, because we know that that's where our community is going.
Jennifer. Yeah, thanks. I don't think there is a commission meeting that the word infill has not come up. It's such a popular kind of planning buzzword these days. And our community plan talks about it a lot. Because the inverse of infill is sprawl. And we want to try to grow more wisely, more compactly, which... And taking advantage of kind of existing infrastructure and so forth. And that is infill. But we have to be careful because infill can mean many different things. And I think we've seen examples in our city of infill that is hurtful to a neighborhood or hurtful to homes. So this idea, Emily, of gentle infill, infill that... both adds to a community and a neighborhood, but doesn't, in the meantime, kind of destroy it.
Could you repeat the question, Sally? I'm so sorry.
Sure, if I can find it. How? No, not that one. That was wrong. What are your thoughts on infill within city limits?
Right. Again, this comes down to our main campaign point, Emily and I, which is the overhaul of the Unified Development Code. I think... well-intended policies such as discussions around ADUs that Joey mentions really are just a symptom of a structural failure, where if you're unable to put what needs to be put on a plot of land because the rules there stop you from doing that, that's the issue. The issue is not let's make it easier to do something, it's let's make it easier to do everything, or let's allow people to meet the needs of the community. And currently that's not anywhere near the case. I mean, unless you're an R5, and like I say, I want to do away with Euclidean zoning completely, but unless you're an R5, you can't build an apartment unless it's at least 1,000 square feet in size. What if I can only afford a 400 square foot apartment? What next? Right? So infill is the inevitable outcome of completely overhauling that development code and allowing people to build inwards, because you're allowing them to do what they want with their land as opposed to saying it must be this, that, the other. And I mentioned there's an ability to do that more gently, as Emily says, and that's by providing height restrictions on that. So it's not like tomorrow you click your fingers and you say build whatever you want, wherever you want. You say build you whatever you want in this neighborhood to this height or to that height.
Okay. Infill. I have supported infill projects that help our city center and reduce suburban sprawl. These projects have been met with a significant resistance from some people, even though almost everyone agrees with the idea of urban density as a way to preserve open space, wetlands, and reduce congestion. And like Evan mentioned about the land is gone. We have to use the land wisely, thoughtfully, and carefully. So infill is very important, and because infill means surrounded by the city and all the infrastructure is there. So infill is very important. Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that we're all in agreement that infill is very central to our community growing in a way that's going to promote health and wellness, and it's going to be in alignment with our growth plan, with our transportation plan, with our climate action plan. So we need to really focus on the type of infill that we need, which I would say is higher density infill. Because the truth is we have a housing crisis, but we continue to build housing that won't support the needs of our community, we're going to be in this problem forever. And so I do really support higher density infill. And I think that, we have these conversations on the commission a lot where we have parts of our community in the middle of town that are undeveloped fields. And people have a lot of feelings about those fields being transitioned into something different. And so those are the types of conversations that commissioners have to be comfortable having, because you're talking about someone's community changing and shifting. But I think that our larger community plans and the needs of our community that we have for the next, you know, for the next 100 years really compel us to do that.
Okay, I'm going to do a 30-second one because we need time. Okay. We need time. This is going to be awful. I'm sorry to do this, and it's a huge question, too. And we're going to start with you.
Yeah, I get to start. Awesome.
Okay. Do you see our public transportation system as being effective? It was longer than that, but I'll just...
Okay.
And what should we do about it?
Yeah, I mean, in many ways it is effective. It just doesn't have the reach that it needs. We've talked with lots of folks in the community who have struggled to, you know, who are have a disability, and it's tough for them to get to the bus. So then they basically just don't get to actually invest or experience much of the community. We know that public transportation is central to a healthy, functioning city. So yeah, it just needs. It's really about growing its reach and expanding its reach right now. 30 seconds.
I think our public transportation right now is a good start, but there is so much more potential there, and we need to kind of keep our eye on the ball and of that potential, which means growth of our transit system, which means more money into the system, and the ability to grow ridership, expand reach. So I think we're not quite there yet, but on our way.
Evan? So the first part of it is our public transit good enough, essentially?
Is it being effective?
Is it being effective? No. But our density doesn't really warrant it yet, unfortunately. Both our density and our population size, full stop. But so everybody at this table is a huge fan of Streamline. Everybody at this table wants to expand the services. But, you know, I was spoiled, you know, in Europe, when a bus comes every 5 minutes, not every 40. And until we get to that stage, I think usership is still going to be, or user rates are still going to be very low. So, as everyone else has said, not yet, long way to go, perhaps.
Okay. Eo?
Yes, I was city liaison for the HRTC Streamline buses. I've been talking our city and county commissioner. Our city gives some fund. County commissioner, I told them, please give some money to HRTC so we can have more frequent and more route. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that our public transit system is effective for what it's doing, which is people rely on that system every single day to get to where they're going. They rely on it to get to work. They rely on it to get to healthcare. They rely on it to get to their friend's house. And so it is working. It's moving people around in our community who maybe wouldn't have any other way to get around. I think that there's definitely room for improvement, and I think that will be a bulk of work for the next commission to help navigate what the next phase of public transit in our community looks like.
So I love this question. Evan and I spend a lot of evenings together talking about this stuff, and he has enlightened me so much to the notion of public transportation systems and other places. And I would say that it's effective. I would say that it's inadequate. But one of the things that we've discussed together that he brought to me is it in the in-between, it's not just Streamline. We need to look at other things, too, like rideshare and shuttle services. There are other public transportation tools at our disposal than Streamline.
Thank you. And that was crummy of me to ask you to answer that question in 30 seconds. And we're going to do concluding remarks, but I would like to pause for 1 second to do a shout out to Beth Boyson and Sarah Creech, who have struggled mightily with the electronics, and apparently it's worked tonight, and it didn't work last night, and I'm so sorry about that. We really wanted to have candidates all in one room, even though we can't have a full audience, as would be our wish, of course, because of the COVID numbers. So the other thing I want to say is I am so impressed that all of you are willing to serve on the county or the city commission. It is underpaid, overworked, and I have huge respect for your running for office, all of you. So, who would like to start with your final concluding remarks?
2 minutes.
2 minutes apiece, yeah. Should I just pick on somebody? I'm picking on Jennifer because she was the next one in line.
Yeah. Thanks so much to the League of Women Voters for putting this on, and I know it's a partnership with a variety of other groups, the libraries and BPA, Bozeman Professional Women, BPW. Thanks. I mean, I think these forums, as painful as they can be for us sometimes, are really useful. You know, they're useful not only to the public watching, but I think to each one of us in getting to know one another and getting to know the issues. And just personally, you know, kind of it's a bit of a challenge. So appreciate it. I guess to kind of wrap things up, you know, we have a lot of challenges in our community right now. Having lived here for 25 years, I think we're at kind of a point of greatest challenge. We've had other challenges in the past, high growth. We've had smoke and fires close to home. We've had, you know, climate change impacts. We've had tragedy. We've had good things happen. But for some reason, you know, it's like everything is coming to a head right now. So I think we've got to be optimistic. We've got to come together as a community. We need to work on solutions. We need to add that diversity to our boards, our staff, our ultimately the city commissions, to tackle these hard issues. And I think we can get it done. I am encouraged. And part of that is just being encouraged by who is showing up and who is trying to put their names out there to be on the city commission.
Thank you. Evan?
Yeah. I think what's fascinated me throughout this campaign is that the voices are there, but you have to go and find them. And that, of course, includes all the people in this room and contributing tonight, but as a lot of other people have mentioned, it's really going to the people that want to talk but don't necessarily have the time or the means to. And it's kind of extraordinary to get this frankly exceptional set of questions and an exceptional set of answers. And perhaps everybody at this table wishes they weren't running against each other and would rather work with each other, clearly. So, thanks, guys. What a good time. But I can't... I don't want to talk any longer because I really need to go to the toilet. So can I please leave now?
Yes, you can.
Thank you kindly.
He's done?
I think so. At least for the moment.
Okay. Let me. I am truly honored to have been your commissioner for the last 8 years, and that affordable housing is an incredibly difficult problem. I will do my best. I just heard a good news from our city manager, and finally we got the 10. Building department, building inspectors. Amen. That's also time is money. Benjamin Franklin mentioned about that, right? And also, I will continue to do that. And also, today, Deputy Mayor and I interviewed about the Sustainability Board. I was so impressed about the volunteer people thinking about climate change. So we together, continuously implement our city climate change actions, and also very important, land is gone, preserving open spaces and wetlands and Bozeman recreation area. And also, we're talking about the small businesses, keeping a small Bozeman business, a business-friendly city, how we can, our city can help a small local business be able to be there. And then I do understand the issues, and that there is a lot of work to do, because I've been there for 8 years. I've been working so hard, so I do a little bit understand the issues. So thank you.
I'm going to start by also echoing a major thank you to the people who helped bring this event together. It's been a really great time. I've enjoyed spending time with everyone in this room and everyone who's online. I hope they've enjoyed it too. So as I mentioned earlier, I am running now for the same reasons that I sought appointment earlier this year, and they're all centered on the fact that I really do care about Bozeman. And for me, that care presents itself as working hard for this community. I have a history of showing up and really fighting for Bozeman. I've been a part of teams. I have brought about housing solutions to folks that are experiencing homelessness. I've contributed to collaboratives. I have elevated the conversation around behavioral health. I have contributed to teams that have built or have designed shelters for survivors of domestic violence. And I continue to work to ensure that everybody has easy access to COVID-19 vaccines. On the 6 months that I've been on the commission, I've really shown that I can be trusted to show up and amplify our voice to get us the things that we collectively need. The truth is that we do have the tools and the skills to build the housing that we need. We have the capacity to continue to promote and advance equity and inclusion in new and important ways. We have all the resources to fund and protect the community-based programs that we rely on, and we simply have a calling to come together to combat the climate crisis. All of those things are possible, and we need a commission that's willing to fight for those, and that's exactly what I'm doing and what I will continue to do. So this sounds very campaigny, but it's important to say that a vote for me is a vote for a future that includes all of us. And it's a vote for a Bozeman that not only makes space, but that creates opportunities for folks to thrive. Thank you all.
Emily? So anyone that's seen any of the very few pieces of campaign material that Evan and I have put together, our thing is be bold for Bozeman. Status quo, and this is from, our top officials, federal on down, has been away for a long time. And it's going to take really bold movements in order to shift the narrative of what a city commission, what local government is supposed to be doing for its constituents, for our neighbors, for the people living here. The four seats that are up right now, this is a really important election. There's an opportunity here to really shift things around, because you do need three votes, in order to make something happen. You need three out of the five. Insofar as myself, I'm smart. I'm insanely hardworking, but I'm not afraid to be wrong. I have genuine love and gratitude for this place that we call home. I feel obligated to step up in this regard, because, like I said, I don't have Netflix. I don't. I watch city, commission committee meeting videos. It's free. It's free. Internet's not, but And so I have developed a high competency in how these different things work. I don't think we need big data to game out every single decision that we make here. The people in this place are capable of constant rational thought, as shown by their resilience and ability to solve problems in real time, not on the time of government. And so we need to take a page out of that book. And so Evan and I would absolutely love your support, and we won't let you down.
Yeah, thank you for putting this together, and thank you everybody who's joining virtually and listening. This has been actually a really humanizing forum, I think. It's been really, I don't know, it's just been kind of fun. And I, as a candidate and as just a person, endeavor to be chronically aspirational but fiercely pragmatic. Always eyes focused firmly on the way things ought to be, not just at the way things are. We've been seeing all around the world and all around this nation the need for youth to be in power. And we've been seeing the benefits when we put young, progressive people in power, the changes that can be made when we're not tied down to the old system of thinking, when we're not so invested in the status quo that we're not willing to be innovative and think about novel solutions to the problems that we're experiencing. I have lived a lot of struggles that I think that are important representations to have in this community. I went to school and I did pretty well. I was a good student. I left with 3 degrees and I won a national scholarship. And it is still hard for me to find a job that will pay me a living wage. That is a perspective that is sorely needed in the people who are making decisions that are pulling the levers of power in this community. That is an experience that many people in this community share that makes this community hard to stay in, makes this community hard to live in. And why we know that we need to invest in the leadership of young and working class people who make this community run, who are thinking in a visionary way, who are thinking far down the road, not just what's happening in the next few years, but are willing to keep working and prioritizing and making this community into one that can be a leader in how we tackle climate change, a leader in how we tackle the climate crisis, a leader in how we make an equitable community. And that is the commitment that I bring, and that is what I live in my workplaces and what I will continue to do, elected or not.
Well, I want to thank you. I'm so impressed by your thoughtfulness and your concern, and it's amazing. Thank you to the timers. Thank you to the library and the other sponsors of this forum. And hopefully next year we'll be all in person and we can have our audience with us.